Introducing Beeb, the BBC voice assistant, and more coming up on today's episode of Lace and Tech News. Hey Gadget here, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lace and Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest. We do this show daily around here, and we would hate for you to miss out. We do a featured story along with a smattering of tech, gadget, and gaming news. So speaking of feature story today, we'll be taking a look at Beeb, the BBC launching their voice assistant to rival, I guess, Google and Alexa. We'll also be taking a look at spies, lies, and data thieves, why it's time to get a VPN. In gadget news, we'll be taking a look at Lenovo's 2019 ThinkPad X1 Yoga, followed by Nintendo Switch Lite hands-on review coming to us courtesy of The Verge. And in gaming news, we'll be taking a look at Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey review. A mobile version of League of Legends might have been leaked. And finally, we'll be taking a look at, well, Epic deciding to nerf turbo building in Fortnite. Yeah, you're probably wondering, well, why do you keep covering Fortnite news? I don't know. It's popular, relevant, interesting. At least it is to me. If it is to you, let me know. And if it isn't to you, let me know as well. You see, this show is tailored on the input of you, the audience. So if there is a certain topic you do want to hear about, by all means, let us know. And if there isn't any particular topic you want to always be updated or current or know what's going on, let me know as well, and we'll adjust accordingly. See, this isn't just my show where I come up with, okay, well, most of the time it's things that I like and that I like hearing about, hence why I cover this show. But if there are certain topics that you want to hear about or not hear about, let me know on Twitter at Tech News Gadget. If you're watching via the YouTube show today, let me know down in the comments. And if you're on the go and you want to shoot me a quick message, technewsgadget@gmail.com works just as well. Just don't keep sending me emails about wanting to order something or buy something because of an article that I covered a gadget on. We're a news media company. We don't sell products. We're not an e-commerce store. We don't make gadgets. And the reason why, you think I'm making this up. I get at least one or two emails a week of people asking me about some gadget that I covered up to like a year or two ago, possibly three or more, saying, hey, I ordered a product and I have a problem. Or, hey, I'd like to place an order, but I don't see an order form on your website. And I'm like, what are you looking for? I'm not making this up. What are you looking for? And they go, oh, I'm looking for blah, blah, blah gadget. And then I reply, Tech News Gadget is a news reporting company. We don't sell any gadgets. We don't make any gadgets. Here's the information that you might be looking for. Go reach out to them, their website, their phone number, their email. Do a Google search. Okay. I should probably get into the show today before I actually flip my lid, as it were. So, before we can, though, let's take a look back on today in tech history. All right, today is August 27, 2019. On this day in 2003, the city of Fairbanks, Alaska, connected to what was, at the time, the world's largest battery backup. Designed to help prevent serious blackouts that plagued the city every 2 to 3 years, the batteries could provide power to the city for a few minutes, which was enough time to start up the city's backup diesel generators. Get this, the battery contains 13,760 cells, covering more than 10,000 square feet. It was reported that in the first 2 years of operation, the battery system prevented at least 81 power failures. So at least that worked out well for them, but it's still technically the world's largest battery backup at the time. Also, on today, in 1993, Compaq Computer Corp, you don't really hear much about them anymore, announced this Presario family of personal computers intended to be user-friendly and cheap. For $1,400, the Presario included a monitor, modem, and software to access the recently popularized online world through Prodigy and America Online, another name that you rarely hear much about anymore. But hey, who knows where we would have been if they never showed up in the first place. So with that out of the way, let's head on over to our feature story. All right, today's feature story comes to us from 9to5 Google. By the way, if you're interested in the articles that we cover on today's show, head on over to technewsgadget.net. And you're watching the video of today's show on YouTube, hi, let us know with a like and a comment down below. I'm always reading and leaving replies, so I see what's going on. If you're writing a comment out, I can see it right now. If you're going to do that, pause the video and then write out the comment and then hit enter. That might save you some time. But BBC is set to launch Beeb, the voice assistant to rival Google, Alexa, and Siri. Now, the BBC is gearing up to launch its own voice assistant. Why? Oh, well, they wanted to recognize regional British accents much more effectively. According to The Guardian, Beeb will launch next year after being developed by an in-house BBC team. The focus is said to be on helping people find their favorite TV and radio shows alongside a range of BBC online content. It's unclear how the BBC will push this new voice assistant, as the broadcaster really has no plans to launch any standalone hardware like Google Home or Amazon Echo. Instead, the BBC is likely to shoehorn Beeb into its website's iPlayer app, to smart TVs, and potentially mobile devices. They will also offer the tech to manufacturers who want to integrate the voice assistant into their own hardware. While we're in no doubt that the current crop of voice assistants are excellent at detecting many accents and dialects, they still sometimes struggle with very unique, harsh accents such as Scottish and Northern Irish. The BBC is enlisting its own staff to help train voice models so that they can specifically train Beeb for wider British accent recognition, with a particular focus on harsh accents. I don't know, I get a kick out of name. Much like the plethora of voice assistants already available, saying the word Beeb will spring the software into action. The Guardian notes that unlike Alexa and Google Assistant, there are no plans to add additional functionality beyond simple navigation and program selection. So, case in point, you live in England or anywhere the BBC covers, don't call your kid Beeb, or you'll activate the software. I'm just giving you a heads up right now. This could lead to new forms of TV and online entertainment that rely on the BBC voice assistant to enhance interactivity, possibly something like Netflix's interactive Bandersnatch show released late in 2018. You may be aware already that the BBC works well on Google products, so it'll be interesting if further integration with this dedicated voice assistant will be possible once it reaches the market. This also comes as the BBC is set to remove all of its radio stations from TuneIn Radio at the end of this month due to the reluctance of the company to share listener data to the broadcaster, and follows the removal of BBC-produced podcasts from certain Google products earlier this year. I think they're probably trying to go like, oh, we need to consolidate. Here's what I think. The BBC is like, we're bleeding money. We need to consolidate into our own company, media conglomerate, and software and apps and stuff of the like. Because branching out into other places is proving to not be as, quote, profitable as we thought. I guarantee you that's some boilerplate release that they'll come out with if they haven't already. Just how Beeb will likely stack up against the Google Assistant, Alexa, and even Siri, possibly even Cortana, remains to be seen. It's also highly likely that it will be only available within the United Kingdom at launch, which should not really affect the more established players in the digital assistant market. But now you know, if you are in the United Kingdom, this might be a voice assistant coming to you soon. And if it is, let me know once it rolls out if you like it or you don't like it. Regardless of that point, if you're listening to the audio or watching a video, let me know your thoughts. I'd love to hear what you're thinking about. My thoughts are another voice assistant, one that I could see being very beneficial and very helpful, so long as the BBC is willing to share the details that they find, helping the global community at large improve on technology. Otherwise, all you're really doing is shooting yourself in the foot. If you think about it, all you're really doing is shooting yourself in the foot and hampering further progress and any advancements that would come out of that. And then keep this in mind, if somebody else will come along, perks of the free market, will come along and they will usurp you. And then they'll go, guess what? I'm top dog now. I'm just saying that's usually how business works and it's how technology works. If you don't happen to figure out how to figure that out, you're lost. I can't help you there, but yeah. So that's what the BBC is up to. They is announcing Beeb. Beep beep. I'm sorry, I had to throw that in there. I don't know why I'm losing it. Can you tell? I'm late at night. I have like other projects on my mind going on right now. Ironically, I also haven't done my own podcast of my own namesake since like January of this year, and I'm seriously wondering if I should just flip on the microphone and do another show there, just talking about some things going on in my life that why I'm so busy lately. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. But it just leaves me worn out and tired, but in a satisfied kind of way. So, spies, lies, and data thieves, might be high time to get a VPN. Now, this article comes to us from Engadget. And by the way, if you're on the go, feel free. You can listen to this podcast anywhere in any app. Simply look for Latest in Tech News or head on over to latestintechnews.com and you should be able to find the subscription options available there to you. We actually were nominated for an award for the podcast awards in the technology category, and that should be wrapping up shortly here soon, so I'm excited to see how that all wraps up. But yeah, if you learned anything in the past few years, it's that the internet is full of creeps who try to spy on us. Don't just mean malicious hackers by that statement. Scammers, Wi-Fi snoopers, account hijackers, and people in trench coats. Often the creeps in question are companies snatching our private data and advertisers following us around like mouth breathing peeping towns. It's a lot to deal with, which is why many people decided to just ignore the problem and take the risks with their security and privacy. The bigger problem, of course, is that we're all connected, so anytime we do the computer security equivalent of, I guess, well, this article puts the peen into the wind, there's a whole bunch of people in our address books and contacts who have no idea they need an umbrella. So whether you're online on your phone, tablet, or desktop, stop doing that. You should probably be using a VPN. A VPN, or a virtual private network, keeps your computer's IP address and your physical location private. More and more people are using a VPN to create a private path for their computers and mobile devices to use when they access the internet. It's a great way to keep your browsing private and attack-proof. With a VPN, your data travels encrypted from you to a VPN server, and from there, your connection travels to your final destination, be that a website, a server, or whatever app you're using. This way, websites and anyone else, like advertisers or attackers, only see the VPN's IP address and not yours. In addition, your ISP, AT&T, Comcast, etc., only see you visiting the VPN, and they don't get to tag along and spy on where you go or what you do. That's why a VPN is essential for personal security and privacy whenever you use public Wi-Fi. You should never use public Wi-Fi or someone else's Wi-Fi without one. Why? A VPN protects your data, including instant messages, emails, downloads, uploads, login information, which sites you visit, apps you use, and even your physical location. A good VPN encrypts your internet traffic, preventing people from intercepting your connection. Though if a VPN offers military-grade encryption, be a little bit suspicious about that. That's just a marketing claim. Many companies use the same encryption standards as the U.S. government, so pretty much anyone can make a military-grade claim. It doesn't mean that they have the same security protections as the military. Now, a VPN is also a handy way to protect your identity. If you want to leave a comment without the website knowing you're visiting, knowing your location. VPNs also protect you from ISPs tracking you and selling the data they collect on your internet activities. Website advertisers spying on you, using a good ad blocker as well. Hackers on public Wi-Fi. And just in case you're wondering, yes, they're perfectly legal and actually pretty normal for business use. In companies, VPNs are typically used to connect employees who aren't at the workplace to a computer at work. They connect remote employees to central work servers. Many companies have VPNs so workers can access files and other resources safely over the internet when they're not in the office. However, VPNs are currently restricted in some countries, such as the United Arab Emirates, Russia, and China. So, yeah, they're generally easy to use. There are many to choose from. So feel free to look into that. There is an interesting ISP that is free offered from Cloudflare called OpenVPN. All you need to do is pick the right VPN, install its app, follow any setup instructions. Most are minimal, at most. Turn it on and forget about it while you safely use the internet. And in some respects, you might actually benefit by higher speed usage. You might not have all that internet traffic getting clogged up trying to figure out where to go, because the VPN servers might actually be faster than the servers you're using. So just something to think about. Options to stay safe out there while you're on the internet. So something to look into as well. What are your thoughts? Do you use a VPN business at home? Let me know down in a comment section, or if not, I don't know. Let me know your questions. I'd love to have a conversation on this. Is this something important to you? Why not? Is this something you just go, whatever, they can have my data? I mean, here's my thoughts. I don't mind to a point. I mean, my data is my data, but like, there are certain aspects of it that should remain private for me, for my own sake, but most of it, I don't really care. Like, depending on the websites I visit, I really don't mind if they go, oh, well, you visited this website or that website. Now, obviously, if there's information such as apps that I use, login information, and I'm on a public Wi-Fi, hackers can get into that. So I'd want to make sure to have that encrypted. Otherwise, you know, like information that you'd rather not have the public knowing about, there's a reason why there's public information and private information, regardless of whatever realm you're in. And if you're in the realm of the internet, it becomes a gray area very quickly in terms of what is private and what is public and what should be public and what should be private. But think of it this way. If it's something that you were to stick outside your house for all the world to see and you don't want them to see it, that's something private. So it should probably be protected. Otherwise, just leave it up there for all the world to see, and that's public. That's the best example I could probably give there. But yeah, something to look into if you haven't heard about it before, and if you have, it's worth taking a second look. Moving on to some gadget news, Lenovo's 2019 ThinkPad X1 Yoga dropped. They formally unveiled their fourth-gen ThinkPad X1 Yoga convertible notebooks aimed at, quote, road warriors and corporate users. It comes with an all-new aluminum chassis, features a 14-inch display panel, and Intel's 10th-gen core i5 or i7 Comet Lake processors with 4 or 6 cores. While the hybrid laptops are the lightest X1 Yoga machines to date, they also claim to be the most powerful, at least when it comes to general purpose performance. And as you can see here, you can flip the screen all the way around. Ta-da! And if you're like, what? What are they doing? Well, you're probably not watching a YouTube video of the show. Head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget to watch it. There you can actually subscribe, leave a comment, and leave a like. Don't forget to ring those bells. For the first time in the history of the X1 Yoga product family, the new 4th-gen machine comes in a CNC-machined, mil-spec-graded, all-aluminum chassis that is up to 15.5mm thick and weighs about 1.3 kilos, making the PCs... I know you're like, oh my goodness, kilos! Can we have pounds here, please? Guys, can just convert this to pound. Making the PCs among the most compact and lightweight convertible with a 14-inch display available today. The new ThinkPad X1 Yoga will be offered with the same touch-enabled LCD panel options as the latest X1. Some will come with a full HD with ThinkPad privacy guard, and there will be others with an Ultra HD display panel, and display HDR 400 certification. Let's take a look here. What else did it come with? Just looking at some of the pictures here. Oh, they have to... okay, well, this is typical of Lenovo and your ThinkPads. They have the mouse button right in the middle of the keypad. It's this little red button that you tap and move around. That's how it moves the mouse around for you. When it comes to connectivity, the new 4th-gen ThinkPad X1 Yoga PCs feature Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, featuring an improved antenna design, an optional 4G LTE, a Cat9 or Cat16 modem, 2 Thunderbolt 3 ports, USB 3.0 Type-A connectors, GBE with a dongle, and HDMI 1.4 output, and a 3.5mm audio connector for headsets. As for the other specs, what do we got? They will start sales in the coming weeks. Prices will depend on actual configurations, But yeah, looks like at least here, graphics, Intel UHD memory, you can get 8 to 16 gigs storage, you can get up to 2 terabytes PCIe SSD. Camera that comes with it is the HD with privacy, and battery size and life 51 watt up to 18.3 hours. Keyboard is a standard keyboard with backlight, pen integrated and optional ThinkPad pen, so you can use the pen with it. You have Ethernet dongle, Thunderbolt, blah blah blah. Yeah. And they do have biometric security, a touch IR camera, thing shutter, stuff like that. So yeah, all typical standard that comes along with this. But yep, want to announce this to you guys for those who are interested and consider yourself a road warrior or a corporate user, an option for a laptop that you can, yes, rotate around, close, and then go, hey, check it out, look, you can see everything. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're not watching a video and you're clearly missing out. Okay, moving on. We got a hands-on look at the Nintendo Switch Lite. It's up on the screen right now. Look at this guy. This reminds me very much, well, Game Boy. I'm sorry. It is very reminiscent of the Game Boy system. You're like, well, duh, it's Nintendo. It's what you do. Well, I know, but I'm used to the Game Boy. I'm sorry. Nintendo announced the Switch Lite in July, and at a recent event in New York, The Verge got a chance to test it out. The new console is a smaller and cheaper version of the original Switch. They dropped it to $200, but that's at the expense of its ability to hook up to a TV. Otherwise, it's still a Switch, which means it's pretty great. Despite its smaller size, the Switch Lite is still enjoyable to use to play games. The screen is a 5.5-inch panel versus the 6.2-inch display, but it still runs the same 720p resolution, which means things look a little crisper on the Switch Lite than they do on the bigger model. And just because it is smaller than the Switch doesn't mean that it's tiny. Compared to an iPhone X or a Game Boy Micro, which was Nintendo's smallest landscape form factor console, for example, you can't exactly put the Switch Lite in your pocket. But it is meaningfully more compact than a full-size Switch, and it should be easier to stow in a bag and be less of a burden on your back when you do. Now, the buttons and joysticks are the same as the ones on the original Switch's Joy-Con controllers, so it still feels like you're playing on a regular Switch, which is great. There are still some motion controls. You'll still need detachable controllers for games like Pokemon Let's Go or 1-2 Switch with Wii Remote-style gameplay, but the Switch Lite still supports motion aiming for things like the bow in Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild or paint guns in Splatoon 2. While the new controls are largely the same, there is one important addition. A proper D-pad for the left side of the controller instead of the full-size Switch's detached buttons, which were needed for the removable aspect of those Joy-Con controllers. It's actually a joy to use. Nintendo has always been one of the best companies around when it comes to good controller hardware. The Game Boy helped pioneer the D-pad layout in the first place, so the Lite's D-pad here is no exception. The connected buttons make the experience of switching between them much smoother than the separate D-pad buttons, and while at least the author here cannot wait to use it to play pixel-perfect platformers like Celeste or the grid-heavy Super Mario Maker 2. Oh man, look at that. I don't know, it looks so much better in every single way. The battery life has also been updated. Nintendo says that the Switch Lite should get between 3 and 7 hours of playtime, depending on how hard you push the hardware. It's a step up from the original Switch's estimate of 2.5 to 6.5 hours, but it's less than an updated Switch's model of 4.5 to 9 hours. But obviously, they'll be needing more hands-on tests to get a better idea of how that holds up in real life. Overall hardware is excellent, which is expected from a modern Nintendo product. The three colors, which are yellow, gray, and turquoise, are all vibrant, and the plastic is a similar matte style to that used on the Joy-Con controllers, making it pleasant to hold. All told, the Switch Lite seems like a worthy spin-off of the original Switch that feels more premium than its budget price tag suggests. It will be out on September 20th for $200 with a Pokemon-themed model planned for a November 8th release. And you can pre-order right now on Amazon if you're interested. But yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at this saying, man, this seems like, in some aspects, a, I don't know, revitalizing of the old Game Boy, but in a more modern feel, like better layout, better screen, better quality, everything better. But it just has that feel. At least for me, just looking at it here, I didn't actually have the chance to have a hands-on look at it. I'd love to, by the way. So if anybody out there at works at Nintendo, please call me. I'd love to take a look. No, please, really. All right, moving on to a review by GameSpot, Ancestors: The Humankind Odyssey. Whew, this came out, and it sure isn't afraid of throwing you into the deep end. The author here writes, "My first foray into Panache Digital's survival game began as a young ape alone in a dark forest. The imagined laughs of hyenas and snarls of tigers echoing in the streets in a confusing cacophony. Before I could finish reading the message detailing my very first objective, a warning popped up and demanded I dodge out of the way. What? Not really sure. Not knowing what to do, I couldn't respond in time, and my ape was left alone, scared, hallucinating, bleeding, and poisoning my screen a milky display of dark green and shifting shadows. I had absolutely no idea what I was supposed to do or where I should go. I began to wander, and thankfully, about 30 minutes later, found the rest of my clan. At first, I believed the entire ordeal was simply a poor start. As it turns out, that first journey through the confusion of a dangerous jungle, blindly jumping in different directions in hopes of finding someone to help me, is a fairly accurate description of what your journey in Ancestors will regularly entail. My time with the game saw me suffer similarly disorienting fates over and over, testing me to figure out what I'd done wrong and then doing my best to adapt. Ancestors prides itself on giving you as little information as possible and daring you to rely on your ingenuity and resourcefulness to survive. Though the game fulfills its promise to do the former, it fails to deliver a compelling reason as to why you'd even want to rise up to the challenge of the latter." And you do have 20 minutes of Ancestors: The Humankind Odyssey, so if you do want to watch the video, there is a link to that in the show notes. You play as a member of an ape clan in Africa, and you try to ensure your lineage continues, and it, it's actually, it's an interesting take on a bunch of stuff. I'm not going to be all game for the whole evolution of species or Darwin, just because, okay, that's as far as I'm going to go with my own personal opinions and preference on the game. But it's kind of interesting. I was kind of interested to see how Ancestors would play out. Like, what would be the angle they would try to put this in? Are they just going to, like, throw you into the game, give you nothing to figure out, and then have you kind of figure it out as you play the game? And it seems to be the case here. It's actually quite interesting. To survive, you need to manage how much you need to eat, drink, and sleep, steering clear of predators while taking care of injuries. As your life continues and you interact with more aspects of the world, you grow smarter and acquire new skills, which you can then pass on to your descendants. And when you die, you take control of another ape within your clan and continue the process, growing and changing, before your entire clan completely dies out. So it's actually interesting thought on it. And let me see, I'm looking through it here. In terms of graphics, it looks great. Man, I mean, look at some of these pictures. Here, let's see if we can see some of them. Yeah, and, you know, this is pretty good. Pretty impressive work here on this one. Look at this one. And yeah, and you can also choose a custom game, the region you want to be in, the settlement you want to start at, and your clan size, and you can confirm it or you can just randomize it completely. The gameplay loop can be immensely frustrating. It's one that gets more drawn out the more you play. By the author's fourth lineage of playing the game, it was taking close to 2 hours to retrace your steps and redo everything you'd already done to relearn a few times already. There's nothing in the game that allows you to recover from a failure and quickly rebuild what's been lost either, which is kind of demoralizing when your downfall is your own fault and downright frustrating when it's just bad luck. The author here lost entire clans because of their own hubris, sure, but they also lost a clan because after going through a change, a game randomly spawned my clan next to a tiger's den, and there are no materials nearby to make weapons. Spent the final 15 minutes of that 8-hour run helplessly watching my entire clan slowly devoured before needing to start over. So, what small satisfaction the game does is consistently ruined by violent predators, though the threat does lessen once you make it far enough into the network's expansive skill and perk tree. So I guess that's the one saving grace of this entire game. But yeah, they also have a E3 look at all of it as well. So if you're looking for a game that would kind of make you rely on your own ingenuity and creativity, that doesn't really involve you online multiplayer aspect of it, where it's just you versus the computer. Can you outsmart the computer? Can you outthink the computer? The people who put this game together, and are you smart enough to survive? To recap, the closest you come to feeling safe while playing Ancestors is when you're up in the trees. You spend a lot of time in the branches as well, but unfortunately there's no easy way to travel between them. You can climb practically anything in Ancestors, provided you have the stamina, so scrambling up into a tree is a quick and painless process. However, with no way to easily course correct yourself, and since trees are rarely positioned in a straight line, you typically only get to enjoy a few seconds of fast-paced, energetic movement before you run out of branch, plummet to earth, and possibly break your legs if you're too high up. Ancestors, the humankind odyssey, lingers far too long in its most toilsome aspects. The game does reward initial experimentation, but then asks you to repeat the process over and over again without any means of securing your legacy. It's an absolute grind to reach the closest that Ancestors has to an endgame goal, and one costly mistake, whether through the game's or your own, can erase everything you've accomplished. What small satisfaction the game does provide is kind of offset by violent predators, but as it stands, investing in Ancestors' journey demands too much effort for too little reward. And they didn't have, here they did. They had a 4 out of 10 for this game, and he spent about 35 hours playing it, and it can probably give you a dozen reasons as to why trying to fight the game's dangerous wildcats is a terrible idea. The good part of it, though, is experimenting how to better explore, care for yourself, and evolve in new ways is a rewarding experience when you're not being interrupted. But the bad is that there's a repetitive nature of the gameplay loop offering diminishing returns with each playthrough. So there you go. And that, good, bad, or otherwise, that's a look at Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey. Moving on, a mobile version of the League of Legends game may have been leaked. A video uploaded to YouTube yesterday shows Riot Games' flagship title League of Legends being played in full capacity on a mobile device, potentially leaking that a mobile version of the game is coming soon. The video is titled in Chinese but reads League of Legends mobile game test version film outflow when translated into English. The video seemingly shows Summoner's Rift with a majority of the same features as the PC version of the title, including graphics, abilities, champions. It's actually kind of interesting. Fans may be disappointed to see that the team's Nexus isn't being protected by turrets, but there are towers in each lane like normal, shown later on in the video. This could be because the game is in early development and the Nexus turrets haven't been introduced yet. However, the graphical user interface contains a small circle trackpad to the left of the screen for movement, while icons for champions' abilities and basic attack buttons are on the right of the screen. The top left of the screen seemingly shows the full map, including each lane. Underneath the map, it looks like players can see their gold, and the chat is underneath that. Riot hasn't confirmed or officially announced that, well, they've made a mobile game, however, but Reuters reported in May that Riot and Tencent have started to work on a mobile version of League, and that might have been the article that I covered back in May. Yeah, you might be wondering, how many articles have you covered in the past? A lot. A lot. Think of it this way. If every show I cover basically anywhere between 3 to 5 to 7 articles a show, covered a whole bunch. So if you're not tuning in to all the other parts of the show, you're completely missing out, and it almost pay for you to listen to a whole episode just to go, oh wow, he does cover a whole bunch of stuff. Then when it comes around to something like this, you don't go, oh well, this is brand new, I never heard about this before. You'd be like, oh yeah, I heard about that, what's the new details, what's the new scoop you got for me? And then I'd give you the scoop and you'd say, awesome, now I'm updated. Thanks, Taylor. That's all. And moving on to our last article today. I was reading through this earlier and I'm, for crying out loud. Okay, so now more people are whining about this. Epic Games revealed why they nerfed turbo building in Fortnite. And apparently, for those of you who use turbo building, apparently it's, quote, essential for top-tier Fortnite players to crank 90s, which is why they were kind of upset when a nerf came in. However, Epic explains that there are actually a number of good reasons for this nerf, with one of them being it benefited low-ping players disproportionately. Having zero ping allows players to, quote, take walls, and Epic doesn't want to be as simple as that going forward. uh-oh, guys, it looks like they're changing the meta up, and they really don't care about mechs, even though they nerfed him a little bit, but they're keeping him in. Another reason they gave it was too easy to defend with, and cited that one player could defend against an entire squad by just holding the button down. Epic wants to build the building, at least, to be more deliberate and less spammy, which is something that was very possible with the previous turbo build. Going forward, Epic Games will be building upon this nerf by making some adjustments that won't make building as powerful as it is now. Instead of prioritizing lower ping, Epic plans on implementing a completely different way to decide who gets a wall. Here are some of the methods that Epic is currently considering: a coin flip between people not currently owning the building piece, a coin flip between everyone trying to build, and favor a person currently owning a building piece. And yeah, I guess it was wanted to be reverted immediately after the patch was dropped. Epic explains that the decision wasn't made to stop players from performing 90s or adding a floor to stop a long fall, so they are aware of the issues that came from that, or if you happen to do waterfall. At the end of all of this, it sounds like the main reason is that they want to eliminate the major benefits that come with zero ping. Players will still have some positives from playing on lower ping, but it won't be as powerful as it was anymore. Epic believes they are leveling the playing field for everyone by doing this, but time will tell if that was the case. For the time being, players are still upset. We'll have to see how they adjust to the patch going forward. What do you guys think? If you play Fortnite, good, bad, or otherwise, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop them in the comment on a YouTube video, or if you are on Twitter, we are at TechNewsGadget. And with that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment if you're watching the YouTube video of today. If you're listening via the podcast, leave us a review out on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you're listening in. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.